I was talking to a pastor friend of mine who had called me for counsel a number of months ago. And he was talking to me then several months after that and said, "Brother Davis, would you like to hear how that bad situation turned out?" And he had a little bit of a light in his eye, and so I, you know, certainly you want to hear it. And I said, sure I would. And so he told me the entire story. There was a 17-year-old girl and a 17-year-old guy in his church. They were seeing each other at church and playing board games and talking before and after church. And before anyone seemed to know what was happening, they were just madly in love, and it turned into a very dangerous situation. Now, I've pointed out this before, but all that is necessary to build relationships is communication. Communication will build right and proper relationships. Communication will build wrong and improper relationships. That's why I do not call regularly and chat with ladies who are not my wife. I talk to ladies all the time, but I don't call up ladies and just chat and enjoy a conversation for a while. And I don't just stand without my wife and just talk to some lady on a regular basis. And neither should you or your children unless and until they're ready to go to the marriage altar. And I don't think it's wrong. I walked into a group of young people back there this morning, a whole group. There must have been 8 or 9 young people all just chatting together about the trip they just made. I didn't have any problem with that. Please understand and balance what I'm saying here. But it is very important that you understand the principles. The pastor said, "Brother Davis, this is bad. If these young people turn 18, they're going to elope within a month, and their marriage will not last 6 months. I asked about the parents of the young people, and the pastor said to me, "The girl's father is one of the best men in my church. He teaches a Sunday school class, heads up a soul-winning ministry. But the girl's mother hardly ever comes to church and honestly doesn't seem to like me as a pastor at all." I said, "Will the parents do what you ask them to do?" That's always a key question. Lots of people won't seek counsel. Lots of people who do seek counsel won't do what they're shown they need to do. And he said, "I think they will, but we don't have any idea how to stop this. It looks to me like these two young people are going to self-destruct." I said, "Dear brother," and he is a good friend of mine, I said, "There is an answer, but there is not an easy answer." He said, "Please tell me what to do." Now, in the New Testament, God mentions 5 different houses. That is the word that is used. It's the word house. I want to cue in on 3 of those 5 houses for this message tonight. But as I do so, allow me first to make several key foundational introductory thoughts or statements about those houses. In God's perfect plan, all of these houses are to be in harmony. Each have been given authority and responsibility by God. None of these houses are designed to have, nor can they have, dual headship, which would be more than one head. Each of them has one head. These houses that I'm talking about, I'm putting quotation marks around them, were not meant to conflict and will not conflict unless one of them violates its jurisdictional lines of authority. They also were not meant to compete. They certainly were not meant to consume each other, though that has happened in history. Rather, they are meant to complement each other. Those key houses are there because God knew that we needed all of them. Often, these houses desperately need each other's help and support. Within each of these houses, you will often find a diversity of houses like them. So here's a house, here's a house, here's a house. That's the biblical word that is used. And underneath each of these houses is a diversity of many other houses. Or you might say, not just underneath, but side by side, there are many of these. These houses also were not meant to compete, but to complement. The goal should always be strengthening, not weakening. Now, would you notice house number one is in 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 4, where it says, "One that ruleth well his own house, having his children in subjection with all gravity. For if a man know not how to rule his own house, how shall he take care of the church of God?" And house number one is very simple. It is the family. Notice that the husband is to rule the house. The wife is to guide. The husband, they are a team who is working together. And the father writes the constitution for the home, and the mother writes the daily laws and carries out what the father sees as needs to happen in the home. There is no dual headship. This same house is mentioned in the book of Joshua when Joshua said, "As for me and my house," he was very decisive about it, "we will serve the Lord." Proverbs chapter 6, verse 20 talks about that father and mother working together when it says, "My son, keep thy father's commandment and forsake not the law of thy mother." Now, also notice the distinction between the family house and the next one that I'm going to get to, and that is the church house in 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 5. "For if a man know not how to rule his own house, how shall he take care of the church of God?" And here is the family house, here is the church. They are not one, and they cannot be one and the same. House number two is found in verse 15 of this same chapter. "But if I tarry long, that thou mayest know how thou oughtest to behave thyself in the house of God, which is the church of the living God, the pillar and ground of the truth." The house of God, which is the church of the living God. So you've got the home, and you've got a head for the home, and then you've got the church, and the pastor is to rule the church like the husband or the father rules in the home. It should not be dictatorial leadership. It should be loving servant leadership. But again, there's really not a possibility of dual headship. Then the third house that I want to call to your attention is referred to 146 times in the Bible, and that is the house of Israel. Genesis 12:2, God said to Abraham, "I will make of thee a great nation." Luke chapter 7, verse 5, "For he loveth our nation." Acts chapter 2, verse 36, "Therefore let all the house of Israel know assuredly that God hath made that same Jesus whom you crucified both Lord and Christ." And so you have the nation of Israel, and he refers to it as the house of Israel. And so you have three different houses. That is the house of the family, the house of the church, and the house of the nation. And in each of these, you have not dual headship, but you have hopefully the proper kind of leadership. And these houses are areas of jurisdiction. Somebody said this: men forget everything, women remember everything. That's why men need instant replays in sports. They've already forgotten what just happened. Now, you may forget everything else from the message tonight. I'd like even the men to remember one word, and that is the word jurisdictions. Would you say it with me, please? Jurisdictions. What is jurisdictions? It is a very important biblical concept. In Matthew chapter 22, if Jesus had not understood the concept of jurisdictions and jurisdictional authority, he would have been trapped. When the Pharisees came to him and challenged him, saying, "Is it lawful to give tribute unto Caesar or not?" And Jesus said, "Bring me the tribute money." And they brought him a penny that had Caesar's image on it. And he asked the question, "Whose is the image and superscription?" And they said, "Caesar's." Then he said unto them, "Render therefore unto Caesar the things which are Caesar's, and unto God the things which are God's." He was really talking about the differences in jurisdictions. There are people all around us who are confused and trapped by that confusion because they do not understand, first of all, jurisdictional authority or the leadership of each of these houses. What is that? It relates to who is in control. It relates to who has control and what is their area of control. Where are the lines where one organization's jurisdiction stops and another one stops? So where one stops and another one starts. All right? If you look at the word jurisdiction in the dictionary, they'll give you three different definitions. The second one says the authority of a sovereign power to govern one, to govern. The third one says the range or sphere of authority. But probably the most common place in America to hear the term jurisdiction is used in a courtroom, and that was definition number one. In law, the legal right to hear and decide a case. As I understand it, and I don't understand a lot about law, there's a lot of folks here who understand a lot more about it than I do, but I've read just enough to understand that the first thing that must be determined in any courtroom proceeding is whether or not that court has jurisdiction in that area. Does that court have the right to decide that case? A court could spend weeks of time on a case, and then it be appealed to a higher court where it is ruled that the lower court had no jurisdiction, no right at all to even determine the case, and all the time and expense of that lower court was wasted because the higher court said, you didn't even have the right to touch this. You didn't have the jurisdictional, it was not your jurisdictional authority to deal with it. A Mexican policeman would have no right at all to arrest me here in the state of Illinois. He could be wearing a uniform, show me his badge, but he's out of his area of jurisdiction, and if he even tried to do it, he could be arrested for doing it. Now, if he and I are both in Mexico, that's a very different story. I've been to Mexico. I respect the authority of the policeman there just like I do here. And you know, there have been times when someone came to my office and asked me to do something or to deal with some problem, and I said to them, I can't. And they said, why not? And I'd say, that's not my area of jurisdiction. I'd love to see something done about that area you're talking about, maybe or maybe not, but it's not mine to determine. Jurisdictional authority is a thread woven throughout the Bible. In Genesis 1:28, Adam and Eve were given jurisdiction over all of God's creation. Listen to it. And God blessed them, and God said unto them, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea. That means it's all right to eat halibut and bluegill and bass and some of those others out there too. And over the fowl of the air. That means it's all right to eat turkey and chicken and other flying birds, all right? And over every living thing that moveth upon the earth. That means it's also all right to eat some deer steaks every once in a while and some beef steaks every once in a while. I should be getting a few amens here, don't you think? Amen. Now, they were given jurisdiction over all of God's creation. Adam's authority was worldwide, but Adam's authority was derived. Now, you see these three houses that God created in the Bible, but each one of these, the home and the church and the government, each one of those organizations, if it is to function properly, must recognize that its authority to act and rule comes from the Creator Himself. The majority of Americans are awfully confused in this area, folks. Did you know that? They take the phrase separation of church and state, they treat it like it's in the Constitution. It's not in the Constitution. But they take that and they say it means to keep God out of everything. That is so absurd that it would be hilarious were it not for the fact lots of people actually believe it. Romans 13:1 says, "For there is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God." There would not be a government at all if God had not established it. There would not be a president in the White House if God did not give him his power. Government is under God, responsible to God, answerable to God, accountable to God, and anything but independent of God. Our forefathers understood this clearly. That's why you read things like James Madison saying, "The Christian religion in its purity is the basis and the source of all genuine freedom in government." Thomas Paine said, "Where, say some, is the king of America? I'll tell you, friend, he reigns above." They're recognizing that the authority that our government has is not its own. It was derived from God. That's the reason it's right, folks, to have the Ten Commandments in the courtroom. And isn't it amazing that some of those liberal lawyers who tried to get it out of the courtroom in Alabama, one of them actually said, "Looking at that thing makes me feel uncomfortable." It was reminding him that there was a God ultimately who writes the laws. In 1974, Gerald Ford said, "Without God, there could be no American form of government nor an American way of life." Recognition of the Supreme Being is the first, the most basic expression of Americanism. Thus, the founding fathers of America saw it, and thus, with God's help, it will continue to be. In 1811, a court made a ruling that was later quoted by the United States Supreme Court. That ruling declared, "Whatever strikes at the root of Christianity tends manifestly to the dissolution of civil government." Now, folks ask, do we believe in separation of church and state? And the answer is, yes, absolutely. In fact, if you look back in Baptist history, you will find out that specifically these concepts rose out of Baptist history. I was reading just this afternoon where some of the Protestant reformers in the 1600s, 1700s actually persecuted the Baptists. Some of them tortured Baptists. Some of them imprisoned Baptists. These were Protestant reformers, and they didn't understand the principles of separation of church and state. And so Roger Williams and others brought these concepts into our Constitution and into the amendments to our Constitution so that we have been able to survive as we've been able to as a country all these years. So we don't only believe in the separation of church and state. We believe in the separation of church and home and state. And we believe in the separation, watch me, of home and home and home. And we believe in the separation of church and church and church. And we believe in the separation of state and state and state. We do not believe you can separate God from the church or God from the government or God from the home and either one of them be what they ought to be. So jurisdictional authority means that the church, the state, and the home should all recognize that they are under God and submit to their God-given responsibilities and do their best to stay out of each other's business unless they're asked for help. Jesus said, "Render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, to God the things that are God." He was saying, keep the state separate from the church. Jesus would not go against Caesar because he would have been going against the very authority he gave to Caesar. When Jesus stood before Pilate in John chapter 19, Pilate said to him, "Knowest thou not that I have power to crucify thee and have power to release thee?" And Jesus answered, "Thou couldst have no power at all except it were given thee from above." The second area that I want to point out to you is not just jurisdictional authority, the leadership of the house, but jurisdictional responsibility, the responsibility for each of these houses, the home, the church, and the nation or the government. The responsibility of the house. Now, what I mean is this. Find your area of jurisdiction and take responsibility for it. Find what is not your area of jurisdiction and do your best to stay out of it. Fathers, your home is your area of jurisdiction. Take responsibility for it. Somebody else's home is not. Except for counsel and encouragement, stay out of their home. Now, when someone else's home, when I say stay out of that, I mean don't try to rule their home. In Genesis 18, 19, God said, "For I know Abraham, that he will command his children and his household after him, and they shall keep the way of the Lord." There's a key thought that comes in right here. Don't miss this. Areas of jurisdiction not properly cared for have a tendency to fall into Satan's hands. Adam was responsible for Eve, but he was passive when he should have been active and protective, and Satan deceived Eve so that she ate of the forbidden fruit. Eli was God's priest over Israel, but he neglected the jurisdictional responsibility for his family. He was passive when he should have been active. 1 Samuel 3:13 says, "His sons made themselves vile, and he restrained them not." Fathers, you must not be passive. You say, "But I'm afraid that I'll do something wrong." But you're already doing wrong if you don't take charge of your family. Passive fathers almost always wind up with problem children. I have a preacher friend who told me this story. A fellow had a 15-year-old daughter who fell in love with a 19-year-old fellow. She shocked her parents by running away with him. Dad found out where they were and went to get her. Thank God he did. The girl went back peaceably with her dad, but looked at him and said to him, "Dad, we really didn't do anything wrong, but I love him, and I'm not going to be happy till I marry him." She moped around the house for days, stretching into weeks. Dad and Mom tried to talk to her. They took a week and went on vacation to Florida together, but nothing changed her. This probably happened, I'm guessing, 25, 30 years ago. Nothing seemed to change her. Finally, Dad gave in and said, "All right, I'll let you marry him." 16-year-old marrying a 19-year-old. Boy, was she happy. Oh, she was ecstatic. "Oh, Daddy, I love you." 2.5 years later, the fella dropped her and her two babies off at her parents' house and drove away to never return again. What happened? Had a father that had a jurisdictional responsibility, but it was so difficult for him to carry out that responsibility, he was hesitant to really do what he needed to do, and it really ultimately ruined his daughter's life. I have another preacher friend that I'm thinking about right now. If I called his name, he's preached here. Many of you would know him. In fact, all the preachers, virtually all the preachers, I think, that I'm telling about have been here at some time or other, and it's just in conversation when I'm with them or they're here with me. This preacher was here. He was telling me about how we were discussing some of these principles. And he said, "Brother Davis," he said, "I cannot believe what I saw the other day." He said, "There's a 15-year-old girl in my church. And her father has been in my church for many years, a prominent leader in the church. The 15-year-old girl is in our Christian school. And I walked into a store the other day and I saw them. And here was this 15-year-old lovely teenage girl in this big store wearing short shorts and a halter top and going through the store this way." And he said, "Brother Davis, I wanted to grab this man and shake him and say, 'Man, do you realize what you're doing?'" By not taking action, he was taking wrong action. Proverbs 29:15 says, "A child left to himself bringeth his mother to shame." A home, a church, a nation is like a garden. Left to itself, it will get full of weeds. It must have constant care. You must always be working to get those weeds out. have heard and shared many amazing stories with you over the years. The story I'm about to tell you is probably the worst nightmare story as far as pastors and churches that I've ever heard in my life. A pastor in Missouri, in a church that I preached in probably 25 years ago, and this happened 12 years ago now. There was a 20-year-old young man in the church, and the man who told me described it like this. He said this 20-year-old young man had a terrible spirit of uncleanness about him. His eyes were wrong. His actions were just terrible spirit of uncleanness. And that young man had violated the previous pastor's daughter. And it was so, it created so many problems in the church that that pastor actually left the church. And a new pastor came. And the new pastor said, you know, I can either run him off or I can try to work with him. I thought I would try to help him. I thought I would try to work with him. He and I became good friends. Now, you know what? If you don't know the rest of the story, that may actually sound good. You might say, you know, a pastor should never run anybody off from a church. He should always do everything he can to keep everybody in a church. Well, let's hear the rest of it and see if you still think that way. Because a year and a half later, that pastor had been through probably as bad a nightmare as I've ever heard. After he became good friends, he also became good friends with the pastor's whole family, which included two teenage daughters. One afternoon, when one of the daughters was getting out of school without the pastor knowing it was happening, the girl came out a few minutes early, and this 20-year-old young man met her, and they ran off together. Well, the pastor was incensed, to say the least, was upset, to say the least. He went and found them. The young man said, this is terrible. I'm so sorry. And I won't do anything like this again. And the young lady came back home. And then the pastor's wife herself ran off with the young man. And the pastor couldn't find out where they were. Days went by. And finally, I believe it was about 10 days' time, the pastor found out where this young man and his wife were, and they were at a cabin off in the woods somewhere. He decided he was going to go get them. He heads out there. Somebody got word to the young man and the pastor's wife that the pastor was headed out there to see them. And they decided they better run for their lives. The problem was there was a single lane gravel road that went way back in the woods to this cabin where they had hidden out. And as they were coming out, the pastor was coming in. And the pastor decided he tries to wave them down and he sees they're not going to wave them down. I'm not telling you what he did. I'm not telling you that what he did was right. I'm just telling you what happened here, all right? He sees they're not going to stop, so he decides he's going to stop them however he needs to. And they actually had his other car. They have been living off of the pastor's credit card and had already run up several $1,000s in charges. Pastor didn't even know that till later. The pastor rams their vehicle to stop them. And the last I heard, the pastor was charged with the crime of using a vehicle as a deadly weapon. He had insurance on both of those vehicles. He almost destroyed both vehicles, and the insurance company was saying, we will not pay the insurance, we will not pay the cost on either one of these. He's run up several $1,000s in these bills that he with the cars, with the problems with his wife, his daughters, with the problem with the pastor's wife. Now, whether he and his wife ever really got back together, I never did hear. I heard this story right after all of that happened, and the man who told me the story, who was from there, said to me, "Brother Davis, it looks like both the pastor's home and the church will not survive this one." I preached in that church probably 25 years ago, and the night I preached there on a Friday night, they had 275 to 300 people there. And at that point, from what that young man had done with the previous pastor's family and now had done with the succeeding pastor's family, they were down to about 30 or 40 people. The destruction was horrific, and it looked like neither the pastor's family nor the church were going to survive what had happened. Now, could I share this thought right here? Today's my 33rd anniversary, and I just feel like it's a good time to say this. You know, you may not always understand everything a pastor does, but at least be glad if you have a pastor who takes responsibility for his jurisdictional area of responsibility. Because if you don't, and I know sometime or other that probably I will not be pastor here. I'm hoping the rapture takes place and I get to be pastor till I die, all right? But that may not happen. May I promise you something? When you're looking for a man of God, make sure that you find, number one, a man who is a man of God. Number two, a man who will take jurisdictional responsibility for the life of the church. Several years ago now, we had some young men who came to our church. And I watched them. They were here. Some of you will remember this. I watched those young men. They were just visiting. But I noticed the way they acted, the way their eyes were, and what they were doing before and after church. And I just was not feeling very good about it. It was very obvious to me and to some others that they were scouting out. That's the way I describe it, the young ladies in our church. I watched it for three or four services. And then I asked them to come in my office and talk to me. I told them that we were always happy to have visitors at our church. And we are, amen? But I wondered why they weren't going to their own church, which was a good, solid Bible preaching church within short driving distance of this whole area here. They said, "Well, we don't really like our church or our pastor, and you're a better preacher, and we like listening to you more than him." They tried to flatter me. Proverbs 29:5 says, "A man that flattereth his neighbor spreadeth a net for his feet." I rejected the flattery. Then I looked them eye to eye. I had two or three of them in the office, and I said, "Fellas, I got to be honest with you. I think you're here because you want to scout out the young ladies in our church." Now, understand something, fellas. If you want to talk to these girls' parents and do things properly through their fathers, that's one thing. But you cannot just come to this church and do what you are doing. They looked at me and I said, "I need to ask you a couple of questions. Are you right now right with God?" "No." "Are you right with your pastor?" "No." I said, "Do you know, if you want to get right with God and right with your pastor and with God and your pastor's permission and blessing, come and be a part of this church, then that would be fine. But if you just want to come here and scout out the girls here, you're not going to do it." They said, they got a little cocky, "And what are you going to do?" I said, "I'm not sure you want to know what I will do." They said, "Tell us." I said, "I'm not going to physically try to restrain you from coming in this church. By the way, we did do that several months ago. We did physically stop somebody from coming to this church and are not ashamed of it." There was a mother and a little boy coming on one of our buses who were coming to our church, and they were being stalked by a man. And they had already tried to stop him from coming around them. And I saw he had come here once or twice, and I knew he is doing nothing but for some ungodly reason trying to be around that little boy. And I saw him walk in on Sunday morning, and I was expecting him to come, and I met him in the hallway, and he said, "Where is so-and-so?" And he named that little boy, and I said, "You are not welcome to talk to that little boy. And if you would like to go in there and have a seat in the back of the auditorium, that'll be fine. If not, there is the door. You can leave." He said, "Oh, you wouldn't dare." I said, "Yes, I just did." And other men started surrounding me. I'd already told two or three key men. I said, "I think we're about to have a problem here." And I said, "We are not going to have this problem. It is not going to happen." And those other men came up beside me, and I said, "You can choose. You can walk in there and sit down. You are not to be around that little boy. I've already talked to his mama. His mama doesn't want you around him at all, and I don't know why you're wanting to be around him, but you're not going to be." And he got mad and stomped out, and we haven't seen him since. And I say, "Amen. It's the way it ought to be." So I looked at these boys, and I said, by the way, I didn't really physically throw them out of the church. But he hadn't been back. And if he wants to come back, get right with God, he'd be welcome now. But he's not going to come here and scout out some little boy or little girl in his church. I said to these young men sitting in my office, "I'm not going to physically throw you out of the church. That'd be dumb." They said, "What you going to do?" I said, "I will simply stand up in the pulpit and tell everybody who you are and why you are here. And that you are not here for the right reason, that they better protect their families from you. In other words, I will mark you like the Bible commands that I do. In Romans chapter 16, verse 17, mark them which cause divisions and offenses, contrary to the doctrine which you have learned, and avoid them." And I said, "I will mark you from the pulpit." And they said, "You wouldn't do that." I said, "I don't really want to, but try me and find out." By the way, I had families who at the time got upset with me, who later came back and apologized and thanked me for doing what I did. Said, "Pastor, at first we didn't think you was right. We thought you was awful high-handed. We thought you were too strong. Now we look back, we recognize, we thank God for you. Those families are still in this church, and their children are now married and doing well." You say, "Why don't you do that?" Because I'm a shepherd, and those guys were wolves looking for lambs. And I would much rather have spent my time doing something else, but I had a difficult responsibility in my jurisdiction, and I protected the flock. The third area of the houses is jurisdictional influence, or the influence of these houses on each other. Each one of these three must relate to one another and influence one another without crossing each other's lines. The truth is, the state needs the church for its wisdom as much as the home needs the state for its protection. And the church needs the home, and the home needs the church. And so I try to always be a positive influence on your home. We showed a video here years ago that told about an area of the United States about 100 years ago now, where revival came to the churches and the homes, and crime ceased completely. Can you imagine that? They said the police had nothing to do for months. The jails were totally empty for months. Can you imagine that? That is good influence of the church and the church on the home and on the state. The state must be careful. I'm talking about the influence. The state must be careful of the laws it passes. Some legislators would like to pass laws that would stop all loving spankings. And if and when they do, they have crossed the line and they have weakened the home. The state really needs to pass some laws limiting divorce. It is far too easy to get a divorce in America. In our day, an unwed mother would get on welfare, and then some rascal will move in with her and mooch off of her and the government. That influence of the state on the home is wrong influence, generally speaking. Because of the sinfulness of human nature, the state tends to become the most powerful of these three houses. But the power of the state must be limited, or you have what the communist countries have had for years. What the state ought to do is to encourage the strengthening of the home and the church so as to make lighter its own load. Do you realize that one out of every 100 people in America now is in jail or in prison? Do you realize that we are going to reach the point where we cannot pay to house them anymore? And if we do not start doing something, if the state does not start doing something to strengthen the homes and the families, and it starts, very simply, it starts by taking the right stand on proper moral issues, standing against homosexual rights, standing against things like the ERA, standing against abortion, standing against those things, and standing for that which is moral and right. That's where it needs to start. One of the most serious violations of jurisdictional lines of authority in our day takes place when a girl is taken for an abortion without her parents' knowledge. The government has committed two serious wrongs here. They have crossed the line into the parents' jurisdiction. And that, secondly, they have violated their own responsibility as the government to protect the life of its citizens, including those unborn babies. Now, I'm already in my next point, and that is jurisdictional support. That is the support houses should give, these houses should give each other. We all need, listen to me, we all need all of these houses. Let me say it plainly. You need a local church. There is so much deception about the church in our day. Many have begun to have, and this is spreading. It's still spreading. It is astounding to me. Many have begun to have home church. It sounds good. They refer to the churches that were in homes in the New Testament. Romans 16:5 refers to the church that is in their house. 1 Corinthians 16:19 talks about the church in the house of Aquila and Priscilla. Colossians 4:15 refers to the church in the house of Nymphas. Philemon 1:2 refers to the church in the house of Philemon. Then they compare home church to home school. What they miss is that the church was not a part of the home. The church simply met at the home, at the house where the home was also located. God created the home. God created the church. God created the government. He created all three of these, but you cannot overlap them. The church is its own jurisdiction with its own authority structure. The home is its own jurisdiction with its own authority structure. The state is and nation is its own jurisdiction with its own authority structure. You could have a meeting of government leaders in a house. That would not mean you had a home government. Just like there needs to be a separation between church and state, there needs to be a separation between home and state and between home and church. Now, that doesn't mean the home doesn't need the church anymore, and it would mean that the church doesn't need the home. It does mean they are two distinct organizations regardless of what roof they are under. Men, come to church, and without giving up their authority in their homes, yield to the pastor so that we can all function like God designed the church to function. And then you come to me for counsel, or your children come to me for counsel, and the first thing I ask is, what's Dad say? What's Mom say? And so I back up your authority. Now watch me here, folks. That's got to be two directions. It's also got to be Dad and Mom backing up the pastor's authority, saying to your children, you know what? The pastor doesn't want you sitting in the back of the church. Either sit in the front or sit with us, whichever one you want to. But if you don't back up the pastor's authority, what you don't realize is you hurt your own authority. Because authority is authority. And if you do not respect, I loved what Brother Carr from Mississippi said when he was here preaching the other day. He said, if a liberal becomes president of the United States, I am going to respect that man. Or that woman, whoever it is, who becomes president of the United States, and he said, I'm not going to tell scornful jokes about him. I'm not going to make fun of him. He will be my president, and I will respect him. And I thought, man, that is right on. Because we've got to have respect for authority. Now, there's another key thought that comes in here, and that is that you must find a church that you need instead of a church that needs you. Did you hear that? That seems selfish, but it's not. For the same reason that if you're on an airplane, and I've heard this many times, how many of you have been on airplanes and heard all that stuff they give you right at the beginning? The stewardess announces, now, if the oxygen in the cabin drops to a certain level, then the oxygen mask from overhead will drop. And then they will say, secure your mask firmly in place first, then do the child's mask next to you. That is not a matter of selfishness, it is a matter of survival. If the parent doesn't survive, they can't help somebody else. And you have to be in a church that you need, that feeds you and encourages you. Notice this, folks. I have seen so many people over the years leave churches because they get upset about a little something. And they almost always go to a church with less standards, less protection. And you know what happens? They don't realize it. The home is not the pillar and ground of the truth. And you don't find homes hardly ever holding standards without the church being behind them. And what you've got is you go home tonight and you teach your children the Bible and the things of God, what your standards are for your home. And then you come to church on a regular basis and the pastor backs you up. And you say, did you hear that? That was the truth. Now, he explained it in a way that I could not have explained it. I might not have seen that just like that. And boy, he's right. That's what we're going to do. And families get in trouble when they get in churches that don't have strong godly standards. No other influence will make or break a family like the right or the wrong choice in this area. And that's the reason we do many things here to encourage and support families. I had a friend who called me about a family friend who was headed to the marriage altar. And it was these two families, and they're having problems getting to the marriage altar. And my next question was, what church are they in? He said, I don't know. I said, brother, you can't help them. I can't help them. They need a pastor who will be like a father image to sit down with both families and say, now you need to do this and you need to do this. And I said, if you do that, if they have that, they'll probably be fine. And if they don't have that, I don't see a solution to their problem. It's amazing. Good families can go for months or sometimes for years without a good church to back them up. But they eventually reach a point where they have to have the influence and counsel and direction of a church and a pastor. And if it is not there, their life can be destroyed just almost overnight. I got a call from a family in another state. They were many months ago now. They were asking for my counsel. Problems with a 17-year-old young man. And I said, all right, I'll talk to you if you get your pastor's permission. Why did I do that? Because I don't want to cross the jurisdictional line into another church. That's why. So they got the pastor's permission. And then the father and mother called me together, and they start telling me what their problem is. They spilled it all out. My next question was, now what did your pastor tell you? And their answer was, our pastor doesn't have teenagers. He only has little children. And as graciously as I could, I said, so? And they said, well, he wouldn't understand what we need to do. I said, that's like saying Jesus and Paul couldn't speak on marriage and child rearing because they didn't have wives or children. God works through authority, not around authority. And those parents didn't realize it, but the reason their son was having a problem with authority was because they were having a problem with authority. Their son was having a problem with their authority, but their son knew that they were not responsive to their pastor's authority. They were fighting against the very principles they needed in their own home. I still help them, but I help them through their pastor, not around their pastors. We've had visitors from other churches come here, and I don't go see them without calling their pastor first. Now, I've done it a couple of times not knowing any better. Because I'm grateful when folks from our church visit other churches and the pastor calls me. By the way, if you visit another church and the pastor comes and sees you and he already knows you're from this church and he knows you're upset at this church or me or whatever it might be. I mean, it can happen to anybody anytime. And the pastor knows you're from this church and he comes to see you and tries to get you to join his church without calling me, you know right away it's the wrong church to join. It's the wrong one. He's crossing a jurisdictional line he should not cross. There was a pastor in this area for a long time. Several of our people went to his church and joined there. I mean, it was just, for a period of time there, it was just like, man, when is this going to stop? I had people got upset, they went and joined his church. More got upset and they went and joined his church. More got upset, they went and joined his church. That church is almost gone now. It's in terrible shape. In very serious trouble. I actually talked to him one day and I said, brother, what is going on? He laughed at me. I'm serious. He laughed. I said, please understand something. You may do what you're doing to me. I will not do it to you. It will not happen. If somebody comes from your church, wants to join here, I will be calling you. If they're upset with you, he would say to those folks, if you're upset about something, hey, just forget it and get a brand new start here. And I said, you can't do that. If you left something wrong somewhere, you need to correct it. And the fifth thought is jurisdictional crossover. Crossover. Jesus was King of Kings and Lord of Lords, but he refused to step out of the areas, the houses that he himself created. What happens when you get close to the borders between these houses? You get thunder and lightning and tornadoes and hurricanes and explosions. When you get close to that line between the church and the state, man, it's on the news right now. When you get close to that line between the church and the home, man, it's the talk of everybody who knows about it. When you get close to the line between your home and somebody else's home, or one church and another church, or a nation and another nation, think about it. Think about Department of Children and Family Services. I'm not saying they're not needed. I'm saying it's awfully easy for them to cross over where they have no business being. If no crime has been committed, the government has no more business telling a parent how to train his children than a parent does telling the government how to run its army. Amen? I'm a father. I have had four precious daughters at home. They're almost all gone now. But I was not accountable to the state for them. I was accountable to God for them, to protect them from evil in relation to what goes on in their minds and their hearts. I know a family in California that somebody just made a telephone call and this family lost all of their children for a full year. Somebody crossed a line they should not have crossed. But you know, there was a good point in that story. In the church where they were, there was a family who had been approved by the state to take in foster children. And this family went to that family who had lost their children and said, would you like us to try to get your children in our home until you can get them back? And they said, would you please? We don't even know where they are right now and we desperately need help and we don't know what somebody's teaching them and what somebody's letting happen. And this family said, we will help you and we will do our best to eventually get them back in your home. And a year later, they did that. And what a blessing it was. I'm talking about jurisdictional crossover. How about the times when the government has tried to come in and check records of different churches? How about when a pastor has had confidential information about a crime shared with him? Now, I'm saying this is, you get thunder and lightning, whatever the answers are to these things, you get thunder and lightning when you get close to the lines of these houses. Our society is geared to feeling free to obliterate the lines, but the closer we get to the lines, the more Christians should respect those lines. We do not have the right to cross the line simply because somebody else does. In Nebraska several years ago, The government crossed the line and arrested a pastor for having a Christian school. And some men said, let's get some guns and meet them at the church door. Wrong response. We do not have the right to cross the line because somebody else crossed the line. We don't have the right to blow up abortion clinics, folks. That's wrong. Jesus, in the Garden of Gethsemane, looked at Peter as Peter took out his sword and chopped that guy's ear off. And Jesus turned to Peter and said, put your sword up, Peter. The authorities were really crossing over their lines of authority. And Jesus said, put it up, Peter. Let me show you where it's easy to have problems with the lines. And that is with a Christian school. Thank God for Christian schools. Thank God for home schools. Thank God for the rules of the Christian school. You have to have them. If you look at the schools that don't have them, there's no need to have a school at all in a church. They become just like the public schools. But the purpose of the rules is not to run your home. The purpose of the rules is so that your children don't come in without any rules and standards and mess up somebody else's home. Because if we don't keep this area right, then we're going to have crossover from home to home. Several years ago now, we had a student's father get upset because his son got in trouble for passing a note to a girl in school. And the boy's father thought we made a big deal out of nothing. But the father of the girl didn't want that happening. And that boy had crossed the line, and sadly his father defended him for doing wrong. And the follow-up to that is that young man eventually dropped out of church, dropped out of school, and lived with a girl without being married to her for several years before he finally married her. Jurisdictional crossover is a frightening thing. Listen to this actual quote. A mother said to a young lady, God has shown me a vision. You were walking down the aisle with my son. You are to marry my son. It doesn't matter if your parents agree. Call us after they go to bed. A few weeks later, they met the girl outside her bedroom window. What is that? That is jurisdictional crossover. Here's another one. At grandma's house, grandma said, you call grandma the next time daddy tries to spank you. Heard at a youth group, I know your parents don't let you date, so my wife and I will pick you and your boyfriend up and call it a youth outing, and your parents won't find out. Crossover. Think with me right here, please. Your jurisdictional authority may at times be delegated. It must not ever be relinquished. Remember what happened to Adam and Eve and Satan? I could allow somebody to talk to my child. I cannot allow them to teach my child something God doesn't want me to teach them. That was Adam's mistake, and the result of Adam relinquishing his authority was deception. I must not relinquish my authority to a TV set. I cannot allow a TV set to teach my children something they shouldn't be taught. I must not relinquish my authority to another family. I can delegate it. I cannot relinquish it. I cannot relinquish my authority to a church, to a school. When you come to church, you are delegating your authority, not relinquishing it. That's the reason parents are always invited and encouraged to come to youth activities at our church. A father may delegate the responsibility for helping his son find a mate to someone else. He must never relinquish that authority. I had a pastor who said to me, you're just wrong about what you're teaching about going to the marriage altar. He said, if you look over at Genesis 28, where Isaac sent Jacob to find his wife, and you'll see that a father can just turn his son loose to find a wife. And I looked back at him and I said, yeah, stop and think about that, would you? Check out what happened. And it really shows that without the continual direction of a father or some godly adult, that a person may wind up deceived in a mess and perhaps marrying the wrong person, because that chapter, you follow that through, that was a mess. That wasn't a good example. What's wrong with dating as the world does it? Parents are not delegating their responsibility to a responsible person. They are relinquishing their responsibility to a child who is almost always not wise enough or mature enough to handle that responsibility. Many young people are irresponsible, but virtually all of them are simple and unlearned in that area. I used to have teenage girls come to my house. That was, man, we used to travel with them. It was just a wonderful thing. We're about past that now. But you know, as many times as girls came to my house, traveled with me and my family, we always found out what their parents wanted. We tried to never cross that line. I did not have the right to take that girl somewhere her parents didn't want her to go. I did not have the right to hand her clothes to where her parents didn't want her to wear. I did not have the right to let her watch programs on television her parents didn't want to. Only if I would adopt that child would I have full authority over that child. Remember what I said at the very beginning? Within each of these houses, you will often find a diversity of houses like them. Those houses are not meant to compete, but to complement, and the goal should always be strengthening, not weakening. Too many parents will cross lines to just get what they want, whatever it might be. And the last thought, there's jurisdictional authority, jurisdictional responsibility, jurisdictional influence, jurisdictional support, jurisdictional crossover, jurisdictional obedience, which is the importance of obeying God in your house. And obeying God in your jurisdiction brings great blessings. You obey God. You take the responsibility for your jurisdiction, wherever it might be. If it is the home, if it is the church, if it's your business, whatever it is. In Acts chapter 5, the apostles were teaching and preaching about Jesus, and the governmental leaders stepped over the line of their authority and arrested them. The authorities asked them, "Didn't we tell you to not do this?" And Peter and the other apostles answered and said, "We ought to obey God rather than men." Some people call that civil disobedience. I don't believe that's good terminology. A better term would be jurisdictional obedience. The apostles had not crossed over. The government had. They had a direct command to obey God in their jurisdiction, and they did so. And we could give a lot more illustrations like that, but I'll just finish up my opening story at this point. The pastor had called me, 17-year-old young girl and a 17-year-old guy in his church, and they were seeing each other at church playing board games, their hearts knit together. And he said, "Brother Davis, they're going to turn 18. He said, "As soon as they do, I know what's going to happen." And he said, "Their parents are telling me too. They're going to elope." And he said, "Their marriage will not last 6 months." I said, "Brother, there's an answer, but there's not an easy answer." He said, "Tell me what to do." I said, "These young people have to be totally separated. They cannot talk. They can't even see each other. That means somebody probably has to go to another church at least for a while, because they've crossed lines here. The other thing that is happening is that God is trying to get this mother's attention and get her right with God, and she really doesn't have long to respond." That ended our conversation. The pastor said to me, "I was really in a quandary." He said, "No pastor wants to lose good families." I said, "Boy, is that so?" Here's what they did. The father, listen to this. It was extraordinary how this worked out. The father and his daughter started going to another good church across town on Sunday mornings. And the family with the son stayed in their church on Sunday morning. On Sunday night, they would switch churches. And they talked to the pastor across town. He understood it was fine. And on Wednesday night, they would rotate from week to week. After a few weeks, the daughter's mother started going to church with them. First to the other church, then to the original church. 6 months, 8 months, 10 months, and the father won his daughter's heart back, and the other relationship died because it properly starved to death. That's Colossians 3:5 that says, "Mortify, put to death inordinate affections." An inordinate affection is a wrong, improper affection of any sort. Anyone at any time under favorable conditions can grow an inordinate affection, just like weeds and flowers both come up with the right conditions. And if you pull up a weed and lay it on concrete, it will die because you have destroyed the environment in which it could grow and thrive. The father looked at his happy, changed daughter and said, I'd like you to go to Bible college for a year. And she did, and she is there now and has been doing great. And the boy and his parents are still in church, but not very faithfully. The pastor said to me, Brother Davis, it's like they went along with what I told them to do just to save face. But do you recognize what happened here? There is a description of almost everything I preached. There was jurisdictional crossover. There was jurisdictional support from the church to the home, from two churches to two homes. There was jurisdictional obedience, responsibility, where the fathers of those two homes said, we will take the responsibility for this and see if God will not help us. And I would close by saying there is a sense in which everyone is personally, individually accountable to God Himself. Not just through the family. Your mom and dad cannot save you. The pastor cannot save you. The deacons cannot save you. You have to trust Christ for yourself. You have to be right with God for yourself. Are you saved? Are you right with God? Would you bow with me, please?